At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You've got to have a vision for the future that is going to win a majority coalition that can beat back this autocratic fascist movement. And I don't see any of that. My biggest fear is that authoritarianism ultimately wins because people sort of can't be bothered to get up off the mat. Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and George is away today. So we've got Andrew Weissman joining us. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, I hope it's not going to be Andrew Weissman Explains It All. I'll explain a little bit.
Well, you just have to explain all the illegal news to me. That's it. Well,
this is, how long do you got?
I mean, it's about an hour, but what I have found is that our audience never minds if we go long.
Okay.
So if it's we'll a good show, long show, we'll do what we can. So I'm particularly excited to talk to you today because you spent so much of your career as a government lawyer, and you may know that much of the illegal things we're seeing right now is coming out of the government. You were a federal prosecutor. You served as the chief of the criminal fraud section at DOJ. You were the general counsel of the FBI, and you were the lead prosecutor in the Mueller investigation. So I guess I just feel like if anybody can explain the insane way the federal government is currently comporting itself, it's you. So let's jump right in. Where do you live? Do you live in New York or D.C.?
I live in New York.
Okay. You don't have to give me like your undisclosed bunker location.
Yeah. I did spend 10 years there because of the work I did at the fraud section on the Enron task force. And most recently, as a lawyer on the Mueller team, I spent 10 years in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So you're familiar with the different areas of D.C. and
totally.
Where the National Guard is and where these ICE agents are. I live here. My office is downtown. I was on vacation and it has been wildly noticeable to come back to the city and see like just the force of the police here. And not just, and you always see kind of D.C. metro cops around, but just there's cops everywhere right now. And there's all these unidentified vehicles that have, then they see their lights flashing as you're driving. And so I wanted to ask you about, they're deploying the National Guard. Weirdly, they've got people, you know, picking up trash, like National Guardsmen picking up trash and doing weird things around town that you wouldn't expect the National Guard to be doing. But the thing that I want to ask you is there's a difference between a breach of norms, right, which is just like unwise policy, right, which is sort of using the National Guard to pick up trash. But Trump is also, well, and then there's a difference between, so the norms and the, like, what is actually legally wrong?
And the law, exactly.
Yeah. Can you pull those apart
for
me? Yeah,
so it's so interesting. I talk about that a lot when I'm on a podcast, when I'm on air on MSNBC, this idea of like some things which like, here's a legal issue that is legally questionable or impermissible or clearly violates law. And then there are things that are just bad policy where you just think, who on God's green earth would do that? I was at DOJ, Pam Bondi on day one was like, oh, you know what? We're basically stopping the enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. That's not illegal to have that. It's just like, you know, as a friend of mine said, it's like a perfect time to be a white collar criminal because they've sort of eradicated all of those policies. So this falls into both this issue of militarization of the United States of America, where you see the National Guard and actually the military in various locations in the United States. So DC is not the only place. We also obviously saw it first in LA, and now you have an executive order that I just want to make sure people understand. The executive order, although it's entitled Actions with Respect to DC, it actually calls on the Secretary of Defense to create a cadre of national security officials to be called on nationwide. And it's in black and white. So it's not just a LA or DC issue. This is really one where the president is saying, I have the ability to do this. Here's the key legal issue that applies, whether we're talking about DC or actual states, because DC is not a state. And there's some very technical different issues that are kind of arcane. But here's the big picture issue that applies to all. There has to be an emergency. There has to be some good faith basis for the president to call on National Guard or the military to assist law enforcement. It's a big difference if they actually engage in law enforcement activities themselves, like arresting people. But if they're there to, for instance, protect other federal agents, like they're there to protect other ICE agents, if there is a true emergency, that can be permissible. That is actually the subject of the trial and lawsuit in San Francisco related to the LA calling out the National Guard and the Marines with respect to LA. And that's where I think there's a real, that's where I think that you don't have to be a lawyer. I think you step back and say to yourself, what is the emergency? We know, and I thought Governor Pritzker from Illinois hit this directly and really well, which is if you're really concerned about criminality, why are you not starting with the states and localities where crime is at its at the worst and going down from there? Why are you picking blue states, blue locations, mayors that are African American? I mean, you're not doing something that's consonant with that. Leave aside the irony that you have a president who is a convicted felon who released people on January 6th, hundreds and hundreds of people who attacked law enforcement.
We don't have to leave that aside. We can curb it. We can stop on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it just all goes to the idea that if you are going to use crime is the emergency, that turns us into Russia or Singapore, or there will always be crime. There, that's not an emergency. There will be, even in the most police state, there's some crime. And so that's where you really need the public to push back. You need the public to understand it. The courts, I think, are pretty poor at second guessing those issues. But I think it's really important to focus on the lack of an emergency, a lack of a true crisis, and the actions of the administration that belie the idea that there's some real issue about crime in America that is the reason that's animating what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, and even if crime was I think in DC, like, there's legitimate crime. And since the pandemic was really when it hit, its peak, lots of things were boarded up. Black Lives Matter protests were down here. And so people were like really engaging. We all remember that things were boarded up because of broken glass and all that stuff. But since the pandemic, you know, things have been sort of steadily getting better, which isn't to say there's not crime. It was only to say it did not feel like we were in an emergency situation by any stretch of the imagination. And yet yesterday when I watched our mayor, Muriel Bowser, talking about Trump's occupation of DC, she was weirdly like supportive of it. You know, she was saying, yes, this is, crime is coming down and this has been good. She did push back on a couple of points, like it's not great to have people in masks dragging people off the street, which a lot of us have seen. But it struck me as a weird posture for her to take, because the people of DC are not happy with the fact that we are currently occupied. They're setting up checkpoints and they're dragging people off just sort of main streets. And so what do you make of her reaction to what's happening?
So, you know, I don't know what was happening, what's been going on behind the scenes. I suspect that that is where you need investigative journalists to really focus on what kind of discussions have there been, because it is an odd reaction. I would have assumed that you would have more of a Governor Pritzker reaction, which it is really, I just want to make sure people understand how right it is to that the question isn't, is there crime? that if that's the key, if that's the trigger that allows this, that means that the president is going to be able to send, there's no emergency. That is just saying, you know, is the sky blue today? You can do this any day of the week in any part of the country. There is crime everywhere, in every company, in every city, in every town, in every state. So that can't be the question. It's a question of, is there some emergency situation? And I don't know why the mayor, who previously had, remember during Black Lives Matter, she had like a huge, this huge Black Lives Matter sort of painted Plaza on the street.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Which I thought was basically a sort of real, almost middle finger to saying, you know what? We believe in the First Amendment. We believe in Black Lives Matter. We believe that people should be able to protest. Even if you disagree with the message, that is not the role of government to suppress that kind of speech.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on either. You're right. We probably do need an investigative journalist. I suspect part of why I think it's so odd, though, is like they cut an enormous amount out of DC's budget. And if I was the mayor, my pushback would be, hey, you know what? It's because this is, and yeah, I know you and I might disagree on this. I think there should be more cops in DC. I think we should have a really strong, professionalized police force. But you say, we want our cops, the people who know our community, that our community knows, that understand this place. And so, like, you cut like $1.2 billion out of DC's budget. Give that back. We'll police ourselves. Thank you very much. I find it odd to have a mayor not sort of fight for her city and her own. She reminds me of the Republicans kind of rolling over for it. You don't have to pretend that there's not crime in order to still say, you guys got your masks on, you're all federal, like, we don't need you, just give us our money back and we'll police ourselves.
Yeah, so just to be clear, I spent most of my career in law enforcement. And so obviously, no one is for crime. It's like, you know, and I certainly am not. I just want to make sure people understand it is so stupid to be thinking, oh, in order to, if you truly had a crime problem, you know who you don't send in? You don't send in the National Guard or the FBI or ICE to do policing on the street. That is what trained police officers do. That is being a cop on the beat is difficult. You need to have, as you said, you want to have a relationship with the community for a whole host of good reasons. That is not, I love the FBI. I work there and I have deep respect for career FBI agents and analysts and staff and lawyers. But that's not their forte. And neither is that for ICE. That is certainly not the National Guard forte. So if you really cared about this, absolutely put money into having more police on the beat.
All right. So DC's complicated, right? As you noted, because we're not a state. We're not an actual state, but Illinois is. And he says he's going to go to Chicago next because they had shootings over the weekend. And so he's using the same pretext of it's crime, but again, not at emergency levels but can he do it? And I mean, is this what's going to happen? He's just going to occupy blue cities with our federal police force, who are, by the way, not trained to police American citizens, but go ahead.
Yeah, so this is the subject of what has been litigated and is ongoing litigation in with respect to Los Angeles. So one, you need a true emergency. Two, just to be clear, the military is prohibited, absent an invocation of the Insurrection Act, that there's an insurrection going on. There's a congressional statute called the Posse Comitatus Act. It's not complicated. The military cannot operate domestically. That I think everyone who's listening to this would think that is a really good law to have. Military can operate overseas. Now, what the National Guard can do is, as I mentioned, when you're dealing with a state, they are able to sort of protect federal property and federal officers. So where there's an issue about threats to, let's say, ICE agents, let's say, assume you hate what ICE is doing, but they have the legal authority to do lawful searches and arrests. And if they're getting, if they're in harm's way in doing lawful searches and arrests, the president could call in the National Guard to have that sole function. And that is actually the subject of the trial that Judge Breyer, not Justice Breyer, but this is actually his brother, a district court judge in San Francisco. That is the subject of that litigation, is to determine what exactly the National Guard was doing. And there was, by the way, really interesting testimony there about the National Guard being trained to do that. But some pushback by leadership of the National Guard saying, this is ridiculous. I'm paraphrasing, but just saying, like, this doesn't make a lot of sense, what we're being asked to do, and sort of pushing back on the various orders and thinking it was not wise to be using the National Guard in this way.
So as I make clear on the show all the time, because I'm not a lawyer, can you just explain if that court case in San Francisco, if they rule in favor of this, you guys are misusing the National Guard, will that change how Trump is approaching places like D.C. and Chicago? Because actually just I did want to read his tweet. He said, Governor Pritzker had 6 murders in Chicago this weekend. 20 people were shot, but he doesn't want to ask me for help. Can this be possible? The people are desperate for me to stop the crime, something the Democrats aren't capable of doing. Stay tuned, President DJT. If the courts rule in this San Francisco case, will that affect these?
No, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that this administration is going to say that a decision in San Francisco is going to bind them. And just to be clear, Republican administrations, normal Republican administrations, normal Democratic administrations, if they got a decision like that from a district court judge, even if it didn't technically bar them in other locations, they would put things on hold and wait for an appeal, and they would have respect for the decision, absent some extraordinary circumstance. That is not what's happening here. We see it in the immigration context, where you see just so much end running around district courts and courts of appeals, and frankly, I think the Supreme Court. So I don't think if Judge Breyer were to say this is what's happening in LA, and I find it's improper, I think the court's going to be like, so what? That's one district judge. We're going to continue until we're told to stop. And frankly, as many judges have pointed out, even when we're told to stop, judges are upset because they still go forward in a sort of, what are you going to do about it?
All right. Sticking with DC just for a second, but a different issue here in DC, the increased federal law enforcement presence means there's a lot more arrests happening in DC. So what happens after people get arrested, because the U.S. Attorney's Office is being very aggressive in the charges it's bringing. But, you know, they couldn't indict the guy who threw the Subway sandwich. And so does it mean that even if they're super aggressive and they're clogging up the courts with a lot of these arrests, that the D.C. grand juries aren't going to indict the way Jean Pirro, or whatever her name is,
Jeanine Pirro. Yep.
Yeah. I should be more respectful. I apologize.
Yeah. Good. That is a great question. So there are all sorts of dire effects of having so much law enforcement. I mean, including just tourism, people being afraid, feeling like this is, I don't want to go there because of this, not thinking, oh, it's safer now, I'm going to go. It's just sort of like, I don't want to go into a militarized camp. Now, what's going to happen when those cases are brought? We're already seeing, as you said, normally a grand jury, the old aphorism is a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich, meaning it's so easy to get an indictment. But here, they actually couldn't indict a ham sandwich. And just so people understand, a grand jury is just like a trial jury. It's made up of citizens. It's 23 citizens. In order to get an indictment, it is so easy. You just need 12 of the 23, a majority, and it's only probable cause. It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The government is the only party to present evidence. There's no defense lawyer there. They're not required to present exculpatory evidence. You can ask the grand jury, do they have any questions? You could be very solicitous about, is there any issue or problem you have with either the facts or the law? So the other is that if you're a prosecutor, you only present a case when you believe that there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not necessary for the indictment, but you don't want to indict a case with a little bit of evidence because you have to ultimately go to trial and you want tons of evidence to prove the case. Otherwise, you're going to indict and then just dismiss. So for all those reasons, it just does not happen that you get what's called a no true bill. That is that the grand jury says no. And here we're getting reports that not just that the subway thrower was the grand jury said no, but there was another case that was reported that was presented not once, not twice, but three times. The prosecutors kept on going back to different grand juries, and three times the grand jurors said no, which meant that that could only be brought as a misdemeanor, because as a misdemeanor, you don't need a grand jury. I should back up and say, in order to be charged federally in this country, a grand jury has to decide that that's appropriate and an indictment is warranted on a felony, absent the defendant for some reason agreeing. So one, you could see a lot more no true bills with the grand jury pushing back saying, we're not doing it. The other is you could just see a whole lot of cases. I mean, DC operates is both a federal court and a state court. It's sort of got both pieces, and they do have judges at the federal level, and they have so-called sort of state judges who do the kinds of crimes they think that would be typical to see Jeanine Pirro try to bring. So we could see a lot of that, but I also suspect we may not see a lot of arrests. We may, as you said, see the National Guard picking up trash and doing things that are, maybe there's a deterrent effect by them being there, but there may not be such a huge increase because as I think a lot of people have reporting, crime was going down when all of this was when all of this was instigated by the president.
Yeah. And it makes total sense one of the things that Mira Bowser was saying at the press conference is that crime is down much further since this, increased police presence. And I was like, yeah, if you put cops literally everywhere,
of course,
crime will go down. And so I don't know if you want to do that. Great. I think we should have more cops and they should be well trained and they should be part of the community. So go ahead and make that case. But it is so bananas they are on the National Mall. Like they're all on these. So many of the cops are in these strange places where there's not a lot of crime. It's like it is about visibility for tourists as opposed to in the places where the community really cares about crime.
There is a smart on crime strategy and discussion to have, but just to be clear, if your sole goal is to just have no crime or to reduce it to a minimum, that's going to come at a cost and including, imagine if you're just driving, imagine that the government said, we're now going to track and monitor everyone all the time. We're going to, you basically have to have like mini cameras on you and we're going to track your phones. You could have a police state and a sort of 1984 Orwellian structure where there you will reduce crime, but it comes at a cost. And so if you've identified parts of America where there really is a true crime problem, then tackle it that way. Who are the right people? What is a smarter crime policy? Where should you be focusing? Is it really the case, which and the data doesn't support this, that it's only in cities with Black mayors and Democratic populations? I mean, it's not. And so it's just a false argument to go down that track. I just don't see the data and the facts supporting what is going on.
All right, we just need to sneak in a quick break here. This show is sponsored by Factor. Between busy schedules and summer plans, sometimes all I've got is a couple minutes. Factor helps me eat smarter with tasty chef-prepped meals that are dietitian approved and delivered right at my door. And now with more than 65 weekly meals made for how I live and what I like to eat, I've got even more ways to fit in a real meal wherever my day takes me. The fridge in my office is filled with Factor meals, and the guys here swear by it. I mean, literally, all the dudes in my office all get Factor. It's just piled with their like pre-prepped meals in the fridge. Choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, at no extra cost. Enjoy even more GLP-1 friendly meals and new Mediterranean diet options packed with protein and good for you fats. For the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by Chinese and Thai cuisine and more. Oh, that's good. That's new. For more choices to better nutrition, that's why 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier life, which is definitely true for me. Feel the difference no matter your routine. Eat smart at factormeals.com/askgeorge50off and use code askgeorge50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code askgeorge50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer is only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Thanks, Factor. All right. I want to move on to what's happening at the Fed, the Federal Reserve. On August 25th, Trump announced on Truth Social, because this is how our government operates these days, that he was firing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook, claiming he had sufficient cause. This morning, Governor Cook sued the administration, arguing that her firing was unlawful. In her complaint, she says this would subvert the Federal Reserve Act, which explicitly requires a showing of cause for a governor's removal, which an unsubstantiated allegation about private mortgage applications submitted by Governor Cook prior to her Senate confirmation is not. So no president has ever tried to fire a member of the Federal Reserve for cause. So no court has ever weighed in on the legal contours of it. Ultimately, this case will make its way up to the Supreme Court, probably. So what do you think is going to happen with this litigation?
Yeah, so this really relates a lot to what we just talked about, this idea of something happening and looking at what is the stated reason and what is the true reason, if you think there's a conflict between the two. So stay with me for a moment, because there's sort of two legal issues you need to understand here. One argument that the president has is, I don't have to worry about congressional statutes at all. The president has the power to fire anyone in the executive branch and in any agency. There's no such thing as the civil service. I can do whatever I want to anyone just because it's a unitary executive, and that applies to everyone, including the Federal Reserve. That's sort of one argument, meaning I just have constitutional power. The second is, as you mentioned, which is, even if I lose on that, I would have to show cause. And here there is a claim of cause. We haven't seen the proof to substantiate it. And the cause that's alleged is a claim that Ms. Cook was less than candid and either intentionally or negligently said that she had sort of two primary residences at the same time, which they say can't be true. You can only have one at the same time. The easy answer on that issue of is that cause is that Ms. Cook, and this is part of her lawsuit that was just filed, is that she was given no notice. She was given no due process. She wasn't told what the allegations were. She wasn't given an opportunity to respond to them. Those are fundamental things. You know who should know about due process in criminal cases or in civil cases? Donald Trump. Donald Trump has had the advantage of due process in all of his cases. And so that seems like a pretty good, like I would say that's a winner for her, just in terms of the process was not what it's supposed to be, which is important. The key issue there, the key thing for Donald Trump may not be that he worries about eventually losing and having to give her process. It's whether she's out during the time that this gets litigated and he can put somebody else in. So if he's thinking about control, for the same reason it could be like, I'm sending in the military, I'm sending in the National Guard, he knows that courts take a while. And if he sort of wins, it's sort of like you win either way, if that's what happens. Just on the constitutional issue, by the way, this is, you're seeing why legal podcasts maybe don't have as much support as the Bulwark. But Constitutionally, the Supreme Court has suggested in Trump v. Wilcox that the Federal Reserve is different and that the Constitution will not allow the president to just summarily remove people, that it is required to have cause. So there is language there. So I don't think that this Supreme Court, even though they're going to have a unitary executive theory, they're going to, I think, overrule this case called Humphrey's executor. With respect to the Federal Reserve, they're going to come up with an argument for why it is different and you do need to have cause before you remove somebody.
So you think even the Supreme Court will defend Cook and her position?
They will say that there had to be cause. They could end up saying, we think this is sufficient cause and we're going to defer to the president. I don't know how you can say that when she hasn't been given a hearing. I mean, just as a matter of due process, and I think that's the strongest point. Whether the government can then prove cause at that hearing, you know, we don't know yet. Maybe they can. The one thing that's clear is obviously it's a ruse. I mean, you know, there's no question. We know the motive for why it's happening is so he can control the Fed, which has, you know, as economists say, and I was listening to Gene Sperling on this, he's just like, this is so counterproductive and like cutting off your nose to spite your face. First of all, it's not true that all Trump appointees to the Federal Reserve are going to be his lackeys. CEG, Jerome Powell, who is the chair because he was put there and nominated by Donald Trump, and he has principles, and he is doing what's in the best interest of the economy, not what's in the best interest of Donald Trump.
That was great. There was like a Truth Social at one point with Donald Trump being like, who appointed this guy?
Exactly.
I saw that. Where did this guy come from? You're like, you, bro.
Dude. Like in a mirror.
Okay. So also then, just sticking with these agencies and what Trump is doing. Yesterday, there's this like crazy meltdown last night on the CDC. So another institution where, much like the Fed, you know, the internal machinations are pretty much a mystery to me. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, who are these players? What does it mean? But our health secretary, RFK Jr., tried to fire the CDC director, Susan Meneres, reportedly because she disagreed with his unscientific vaccine policy. But because the CDC director was confirmed by the Senate, RFK Jr. didn't have the authority to fire her. So then last night, the White House said that it had terminated her. So does she have legal recourse the same way that Cook does?
So that is a much bigger open question. The Supreme Court is going to have a tough time differentiating these agencies. In Trump v. Wilcox, this case, they suggested that the Federal Reserve is different. But I've also listened to various professors. There's a great opinion piece today in the New York Times saying it's really hard to distinguish the Federal Reserve from other agencies, but I think that's what the Supreme Court's going to try and do. Here it's worth remembering, do you know who appointed the head of the CDC who is sitting there going, this doesn't make any sense in terms of our health? Donald Trump. And it's like, I think it's a matter of like a New York minute ago.
Yeah, it was like a couple months ago that she got confirmed, right?
Exactly. And this is one where, to put a fine point on it, I know this is going to sound like hyperbole, people will die. This is not speculation. This is not the sky is falling. You put somebody in, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is not tethered to facts and science, and every reputable scientist is up in arms. That two of the people who resigned under protest just yesterday, one of them, I was just reading a scathing letter of resignation about the danger of the community. I mean, this is the sort of anti-vaccine regimen. Is something that is going to cause deaths here in America and overseas. And what I don't get is I don't understand, like, this is where it's outside of my ken. It's not a legal issue. I don't understand the politics of that. I mean, You know who can die without vaccines? Republicans and Democrats, MAGA supporters and people who are against MAGA. I mean, this is just a health issue. It's not a political issue. And it's, I mean, that's why one of the, you know, the idea that that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was confirmed by the Senate is such a tragedy in terms of life and death issues.
Yeah, I mean, I found myself last night just sort of, I know it's useless, I'm not naive, but sort of tweeting at Senator Cassidy, who is a doctor, who's one of the deciding votes to confirm him. And I was listening to Tom Tillis, too, give an interview where he was like, well, we looked at Cassidy and Cassidy said, let's see how this plays out. So we went ahead and confirmed him. And I just can't fathom how you, as a doctor, as somebody who believes vaccine saves lives, go ahead and say, yeah, we're going to put this crank, this obvious, just like crank lunatic in charge of our system. And in that, I read that same scathing resignation. And part of what he's saying there is our job is to advise the secretary on these policies. But he has never once asked to meet with us, asked for us our advice on anything. So I don't know who he's listening to. And the answer is like, which doctors, you know, like just and look. Part of the reason that this happened, things lead up to things like RFK taking over, and it is because COVID broke people's brains in a lot of ways, and what should have been one of Donald Trump's signature good policies was Operation Warp Speed, and the fact they got this mRNA
absolutely
like vaccine out there
absolutely.
Really quickly. But Donald Trump felt the need to run from that. He thought it was a liability during his election, and so he brought RFK along with him. Because RFK had his own small but meaningful following. And so we promised him this. And the Senate, and I actually wonder if Donald Trump thought the Senate won't confirm this guy. Like it'll get him out of, it'll get me out of having to deal with his, but no, they let him through. And yeah, it's not, sometimes when people say, I have this like very Republican still instinct when people say, well, people are going to die. And I'm always like, well, okay, but you know, life is a series of trade-offs to your point earlier. People die in car accidents all the time. And so we could lower the speed limit to 30 miles an hour. Absolutely everywhere. We're going to save a lot of lives. Okay. But we make trade-offs between liberty and safety. Like that's just that's a tension that lives in our republic all the time. But it's more to the point, it's that people who wouldn't have died today, like we wouldn't, like we are making things more deadly all the time. Like these are totally preventable illnesses. And like these banning vaccines is essentially making it impossible for adults to get the COVID vaccine if they want it.
This is not a legitimate factual discussion about trade-offs, right? So I was a French history major. This is sort of like in the Enlightenment, which was sort of the model of sort of science and fact-based. There was also Mesmer, like the phrase mesmerizing. So there was sort of this witchcraft going on. And so there's been these tensions, and that mesmerism is sort of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. There's no counterweight. This is not like, oh, well, here's the other side of that equation, which is it's a liberty interest. It's like people will die. And this is where, in order for vaccines to work, it has to have a certain percentage of the population participating, or we're all worse off. You know what? When there was serious issues in the 19th century and early 20th century with various pandemics, you could actually have like, you know, colonies where people were taken and physically moved to make society safer. And so here, the idea that you will not be recommending, let alone, you're not even forcing, you're just not even going to recommend and thus not make it harder for insurance companies to actually go ahead and be covered and be able to pay for vaccines that are going to save lives. As you said, one of the great victories of science and Trump 1.0 was being able to tackle a problem that was completely sort of unforeseen and unknown, and to come up with a vaccine so quickly and to be able to get it to scale so quickly was a huge triumph of medical science. the idea that we're backing off of that, it's such a sign of where we are, that sort of where you're in a country where black is white, where you, I mean, I relate it to the idea that it's like there was fraud in the election. I mean, it's the same kind of thinking, which is, I'm just going to tell you the facts, even which are not true, and you're going to go along with it.
All right, we got to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. This show is sponsored by DraftKings Casino. You all know how much I like a casino. DraftKings Casino has your playbook for gaming action all season long. Play thousands of popular slots for a shot at jackpots. Over 400 million has already been awarded. New players get 500 spins on Huff and More Puff over 10 days. Download the app, use code AskGeorge, and claim your spins after your first $5 wager. Get in the game with DraftKings Casino, home of the largest jackpot win in online casino history. The crown is yours. But if you've got a gambling problem, don't do this. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. New customers only. Non-withdrawable casino spins issued as 50 spins per day for 10 days. Valid for featured game only and expire each day after 24 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Ends October 5th, 2025 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. I just want to ask you about John Bolton. Because I was on vacation when this happened, but I was tracking this one pretty closely while I was waiting in line for Disney rides. They searched his house, I guess.
And his office.
What goes into getting a search warrant? And are there different standards when there's a national security issue involved? Or is Donald Trump just like, they searched me, now I'm going to go search other people? Or is that like a legitimate reason?
So, let me just give you the plus side. We don't know what was in the affidavits that were given to the court. The reason I interrupted you to say that it was both in his home and in his office is that one was in DC and one, I understand, was in Virginia. What that would mean, because you have to get a search warrant in the location that you want to search, it meant that there, in all likelihood, were two judges that approved both searches. So that gives you some ability to say, well, we don't know if it was misrepresented in the affidavits. We don't know if there were lies there. We don't know how credible it was. But certainly, this is not the federal government doing something unilaterally. They went to court. They presented an affidavit, probably an FBI agent's affidavit. And in all likelihood, two federal judges found what's necessary, which is that there's probable cause that at the location to be searched, there will be evidence of the crime set forth in the submission. So if it's, you know, leaking classified information, there would be evidence about that. Or let's just take that, since that's sort of the general reporting, is that may be what it is.
Yeah, we should say the New York Times is reporting that was it leaked, or was it just it got hacked or something?
That it seems like that John Bolton's email account was hacked by an adversarial government, and that the CIA was able to somehow get access to that. And so that's how they could see what John Bolton was emailing. That's what the reporting is. We don't know what's in the emails. We don't even know if all of that is accurate. Just to be clear, I was in law enforcement for many years. I was in the national security space when I was at the FBI. If John Bolton was doing something, doing something wrong and handling classified information improperly, I'm certainly not defending that. There are people who have been prosecuted for it. There are people in jail for that. And it is not a good thing. Leave aside that the irony as Nicole Wallace says, Andrew, irony is dead. But leave aside the irony that it's this administration, given the president's own history with that. And also just the current people in the current administration in terms of how they were operating under Signal and disseminating things. But that doesn't justify somebody else doing it, if that were to happen. What we don't know is if there's a there. What we do know is that the Department of Justice and the executive branch, up to and including the vice president, have now publicly talked about or leaked that there's this criminal investigation into John Bolton. That's not supposed to happen. Remember, we were all up in arms that at least I was, that James Comey was talking about Hillary Clinton and his view of what she did wrong, et cetera. You're not supposed to do that. The rule is sort of put up or shut up. No one's supposed to suffer that opprobrium of being under criminal investigation unless and until a grand jury decides to indict, going back to our ham sandwich discussion. The second thing we know is that John Bolton has definitely been the subject of retaliation. He was retaliated against just in terms of his book coming out. It was cleared by the Career person saying it's ready to go, and we've sanitized it of all classified information, only to have politicals rethink all of that and say, no. His security clearance was pulled. And I think most seriously, and one that I think tells you again about the cruelty of this administration, John Bolton is subject to a death threat from Iran based on the Soleimani strike. And could you imagine that you have a foreign country putting out a sort of death threat on a government official for doing his job, and the president of the United States says, I'm pulling your security clearance?
Yeah, right.
Who does that? And speak about risks of, you know, to life. I mean, that is sending such a message, not just endangering John Bolton, but sending such a message to people in his administration, which is don't cross me.
So you ran the Mueller investigation, and when all the Epstein stuff, you know, it had resurfaced, and Bondi says we're not going to look at this anymore, and Trump's base is mad about it, and we're talking about they decided to throw chum in the water for their base to get them off of Epstein by saying we're going after Barack Obama and we're going after all the people who said Russia, 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 and they lied. And honestly, at this point, I followed the Mueller investigation enormously closely when that happened. I read it when it came out. I know that it was not a complete and total exoneration, even though I know that for a lot of the voters, especially Trump voters, that has like stuck, the idea that it was all a lie, it was all made up. And so now he's going back and saying they made the whole thing up. What is he doing? I have honestly not been able to make heads or tails of the legal case that they think they are making against the people who, quote unquote, perpetrated the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax.
Sure. One quick thing, which is I didn't run the whole thing. I had a piece of it. So I was working on Team M. We had these great names, and there was Team R, and there was, so Team R was focusing on Russia. Team M focused on Manafort and Manafort related things. And then there was Team 600, which focused on things sort of dealing with obstruction by the White House. That's sort of a quick overview. The thing that I think supports the idea that it's like this has just got to be a distraction, sort of the look at the birdie over here, and why it's coming up now, when, you know, the economy's not going well, the war in Ukraine and the so-called peace talks are not going well. This sort of all ended thing in one day. The Epstein conspiracy theory has come back to bite them, because they're now being called out on it, is that this has been investigated over and over and over again. John Durham spent years looking at this, and he came up with a report that said that he agreed that Russia was doing this, and that he had issues with sort of like how the case was like the category in which it was, the FBI opened it, that it was a, it went to a full investigation before it went to a preliminary, and there's sort of minutia. The Inspector General of the Department of Justice looked at this. The Senate Intel Committee, in which there was a report that Marco Rubio signed off on, saying it was the most thorough report he'd like seen. I'm just paraphrasing, said that this is what Russia's doing. You can read it in black and white. The indictments that the Team R people brought in the Mueller investigation have, I mean, this is not a sort of like, oh, it's someone's opinion. You can read the Russian text saying that you should support Donald Trump and you should denigrate Hillary Clinton. They also said you should denigrate the people who are running against Donald Trump. And so like Ted Cruz, they said that you should support Bernie Sanders because it will help it will hurt Hillary Clinton. I mean, this is not rocket science. It's in black and white. So the idea that you're going to go back well beyond the statute of limitations. Remember, generally you have to bring a case within 5 years. So this is, you know, we're talking about what, 2016. So I don't do math in public, but even I can do that math.
Same, bro.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so to me, it's just, it is, I think one of the things that Donald Trump is very good at, and he now has perfect, he knows he has a perfect audience for it and see the table for it, is the bully pulpit that can change daily and almost hour by hour what is being discussed and what gets covered. And unfortunately, some things are so outrageous and so controversial, you have to talk about it, but it is really a distraction. And so here, I don't see how there's going to be a there. In what they're doing.
Yeah. Just on this point about distraction, because this comes up a lot, there are things that are actual distractions, like the Cracker Barrel logo. And then there are things that are meant to be, like, I don't think that if the Epstein stuff had happened, I'm not sure that they would have had Bondi and everybody occupy DC the way that they are with the National Guard and everything else. It's like a distraction, though, you have to deal with, because he's doing a bunch of illegal things that's impacting people's lives. It's right. Like, it's a major shift.
Right.
One last thing, though, on the Russia-related stuff, which is, and maybe this isn't, the Jack Smith piece, this is kind of a different thing, but it's going after people who investigated him is the tie-in. Can he go after Jack Smith? Can he get away with this?
So, you know, there's a famous speech that Justice Robert Jackson gave. He was eminent Supreme Court justice. He also took a leave from the Supreme Court to be the lead chief prosecutor in the Nuremberg case. President Truman sent him to do that. And he wrote a very famous speech. He had been the Solicitor General and the Attorney General, about the role of the prosecutor, and very famously said something that is core to how the department is supposed to work, that you investigate crimes, not people. Meaning that I don't sit there and say, you know what, I want to take a look at Sarah Longwell and see what she's done. If someone came to me and said, I've got evidence about Sarah Longwell, fair game. Like, you can then look at stuff and you can actually expand beyond just that to say what else is related to that she might be up to. And so one of the things that has been normalized with certainly Trump 2.0 is this idea that it seems totally fine to do that. I mean, going back to our conversation about the Federal Reserve, I mean, does anyone think that that is just like they were just doing somebody had reported about Lisa Cook? I mean, it clearly was were focusing
like
on a person.
Poster. It's this yes. Like MAGA crazy person who goes around like going through right. These files.
And so that strikes me as an instance where they went after a person, not going after a crime first.
Yes.
And so that's, by the way, a norm, not a law. It can become a problem because of selective prosecution. I'll sort of leave that to aside for the moment, where you single somebody out for improper political reasons. The one thing I will say about Jack Smith is that, one, he and his team, just like the people in the Mueller investigation, had to be aware that everything they did was going to be fly-specced and inspected. And you know what? That's not so bad. I mean, it should be done ethically and properly, and it's not that it should be examined for criminal liability. But the idea that there should be some public accountability and that you know that what you're doing is proper, I don't really have a problem with that if it's done correctly. Two, I just can't imagine in a million years that Jack Smith and his team and Michael Dreeben and these eminent people who are career people, that there's any there at all.
Well, they're saying it's a Hatch Act violation, aren't they?
Good luck with that. So Hatch Act, by the way, is a civil case. It's not a criminal case. And it means that you aren't supposed to do things for political reasons. It's basically no politics on government property. Jack Smith is going to have ample reason to say that what he did was based on the facts and the law at the time. I would note, just, it's not totally apples to apples, but every single motion that was made by Donald Trump and others when those criminal cases were pending, saying there was selective prosecution, that this was vindictive prosecution, was denied. Even Judge Cannon, who had that motion, denied it. And so the idea that this is a Hatch Act violation, I just think is going to be truly fanciful.
All right, we've got one more break we've got to take, and then we'll be right back. This show is sponsored by Mint Mobile. You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. That's why many people are making the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium for $15 a month. So while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with your existing contacts. That's good, because can't redo that. That'll take forever. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/askgeorge. That's mintmobile.com/askgeorge. Upfront payment of $45 is required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer is for 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on the unlimited plan. Taxes and extra fees may apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Well, now that you have gone through all of the topics that I had that I needed to explain to me legally, because that's what I use this for, to help me, be able to evaluate politics better through the legal lens, because I'm not a lawyer. You've explained things extremely well. If we zoomed out, though, and I just said, Andrew, you talk about this stuff all the time, you're an expert, we're living through an incredibly unprecedented time. And Trump is ignoring the courts. We've got the unitary executive theory. They're firing people in agencies so we can do what he wants. We got guards on the streets. I mean, it is unraveling extremely fast. And I've always thought people were underreacting to what Trump would do. Like, what's your 10,000 foot thought on maybe even what is the most dangerous thing we're facing? What are you most worried about? What surprises you the most? Just what is your unified theory of what's happening right now?
Well, I'm going to answer the part about what am I most worried about. I'm most worried about sort of big picture, that we turn into a country where we say that we have free and fair elections. We say we have an independent judiciary. But you know who does that also? Russia. Russia says they have elections. None of us think that's true. They say that they have an independent judiciary, and by and large, none of us think that's true. I'm not saying every single decision, but it's like, and so we could end up being like invasion of the body snatchers. And then to relate it to something specific, I think that the militarization combined with the gerrymandering that we're seeing is really focused on what is going to happen in the midterms. And I think that is, I think there is going to be, or at least I'm worried about there being enormous election interference to suppress the actual vote of Americans. And just to be clear, if Americans free and fairly legitimately say, this is what we want to support him, we want this to be, that's fine. That's what it means to be in a democracy. I mean, I will be arguing why it's wrong, but I am real, that is my biggest concern, is that that we are so on the precipice of not actually having true free and fair elections. And as someone has said on air, it's not original to me, that we're sort of returning to sort of Jim Crow and rules and laws that make it very, very hard for Black and brown communities to vote, that scare people to not go to the polls. And if you attack-
which things make it hard for Black and brown people to vote? Like, what do you think they're doing specifically?
So I think that if you have a like, let's assume that you have the military sort of everywhere at the time of voting, and if you could somehow make it clear you can't do mail-in voting, and you're going to check on everybody who comes through as to the same way that we're seeing, let's say you think Ms. Cook at the Federal Reserve has been subjected to heightened scrutiny and targeted, that somebody sits there and says, you know what, I haven't paid all my taxes, or whatever the issue is, or I've, you know, gotten, you know, this federal benefit when I shouldn't have. And you're thinking, I'm not voting because I'm not going to go through that. I don't want to go through this hurdle of, and have, immigration people having, the military having any federal sort of oversight looking at me. It's not worth it as a way to deter voting. I just think that that is, a real concern. Obviously, there can be much more that can happen, because you can have what happened, or was trying to have what happened in Georgia happen across the country, where you have actual interference with the votes, and you have you don't have oversight that is where the press and people who are there to monitor the elections. I think the good part of that is that we have such a sort of a states-based system that it makes it harder for that to be implemented. And I think that that's why I think that what you're seeing now with the president trying to say, I want to exert federal control over this, is a real sign that he's thinking, I want to make sure that I have the ability to monkey with the votes in the way that I tried to do already in 2020.
Yeah, I'm just particularly interested in this question of kind of how and what the mechanism would be for making us not have a free and fair election. And I take your point that people who might otherwise show up feel deterred by the fact that, like, someone's going to be there looking at every, I don't know. But then I'm also, but I, part of my pushback to that would, I just, as I'm listening to it and working it through, I mean, if somebody is here illegally, they can't vote anyway. Oh, so
it's not illegally, but just imagine that you're sitting there going, this administration, if you've done anything wrong in your life, they're going to like come after you, and I don't want to be on the radar screen.
Yeah.
B, just remember, you can still vote. I mean, in many states, even if you're a convicted felon, you can still vote. So, but you can imagine being, I don't want to, I'm on probation. I'm on parole. I have something in some skeleton in my closet I don't want anyone to know about. And those people, just be clear, some people could be saying, well, I don't want those people to vote anyway. No. I'm not here to defend which way they're voting. They can vote any way they want, but they have a right to vote. So yeah. That means they don't have they should not be deterred. I think to me that is that and sort of the mechanics of who's doing the voting and will there be the same ability to have people watching from, you know, all parties that are being represented, that the press has a place to see and watch what's going on so that these are, you have confidence in what's going on. And there can be litigation over it afterwards, as Donald Trump was totally entitled to do. And he lost, you know, what is it, 60 out of the 61 of those things. So to me, that's what I'm worried about. I guess I want to just quickly turn it back to you. What are you most worried about now?
I'm just worried we're not, you said this earlier, but it's not the country that we think we are. You know, I think in 2016, it was easy to look at Donald Trump and think he was an accident of history. You know, that there was this sort of crowded field of Republicans and he was over there and he got a plurality and has burned it all down lane. And Hillary Clinton was sort of a uniquely difficult candidate for that moment, in part because Bill Clinton's bad behavior kind of offset a lot of the criticism about Trump, and the Clintons had been around for so long. And so there's just all these ways in which we could sort of say that was unique to that moment. 2024, we went in pretty eyes wide open about Trump, and a lot of people didn't like him. I mean, I listened to the voters, these double haters and all of these things, but like they were willing to, because of the economy, like a lot of people in my world say like, no, they want the authoritarianism. And I'm like, some of them, like there's a group. But then there's this, like a lot of this other group that was just kind of swingy and didn't like inflation and thought Joe Biden was old and has lost trust in Democrats. And so like the things that worry me the most is that there's not leadership from the Democrats right now. Like the Republican Party to me is completely off the rails. They're going to do nothing to stop Donald Trump. We do not have checks and balances in the system. We do not have what the Federalists sort of said, we need, where ambition counteracts ambition. Like the things that are our mechanisms for checks, they're not there. And so like what we have is elections and the Democratic Party, like the other party. And so I need them to stop doing land acknowledgments and to start acting like a party whose only job is to save America and American democracy.
And what do you think? You're going to tell me, you know, I'm a lawyer, so I could ask questions till the cows come home. But what do you think the reason is that you don't see Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries doing more? Is it that when you're losing, let them crash and burn? Is that the theory? Or is it something else as to why they're not doing something?
I think they're built for a different political moment. This is where it's not that I'm like down with the gerontocracy overall exactly, because I think experience can matter and I would take it on a case by case basis. But I just feel like the Democrats have no idea what they're up against. They have no idea. And part of the reason I understand this is because in Trump 1.0, I still had faith in a lot of the institutions, in some of people of the Republican Party and vote, you know, like I thought those checks would be there. In many ways they were, you know, Mattis was there, but we are not in that environment anymore. Like when you were talking about the redistricting, there's nobody doesn't know what's happening. He doesn't want the accountability of Democrats to be in, like, he doesn't want them to have the House, right? He doesn't want them to have oversight capabilities. That's it. That's the ball game. And so I agree with you. They are going to try to figure out ways to make that happen. It is transparent. And people have to figure out how to fight back. And part of it is articulating the threat. I mean, when we sit here and we break down these issues, one thing I know about voters is that, and this happened when Trump was indicted, there's so much happening that it becomes white noise. They're only going to digest the things that they can touch and feel. And much of that is not the process of democracy. Like whether or not Cook is able to win on process and the way that she was dismissed, doesn't matter to the American people. You're not going to get them invested in that. And so I am desperate for communicators. Like even what Gavin Newsom's doing is absolutely good and better than nothing, because it holds up a mirror to Republicans and saying, look at the insanity you tolerate in the name of partisanship. Look at the crazy crap you guys are just say is fine and you normalize for Trump. That is not enough. Like you've got to have a vision for the future that is going to win a majority coalition that can beat back this autocratic fascist movement. And I don't see any of that. I see people being exhausted, which is exactly what authoritarians want. I talk to people all the time. I listen to people in focus groups and they're like, I don't know, man, I'm tapped out. You know, I'll vote, but like, I can't do anything else. And I am very worried. My biggest fear is that authoritarianism ultimately wins because people sort of can't be bothered to get up off the mat. And that exhaustion is so deep. And that's the thing I see and hear in people right now. Like, people in DC are mad about this. And there are like these little protest places. There's not a mass movement. We're not like massively mobilizing against Trump. And that is what it's going to take, not just to demonstrate that what is happening is wrong and people are willing to put their bodies out there to say that it's wrong. And honestly, I don't think Democratic leaders are going to help us. Like, I think we're going to have to do it. But I also think if there's a mass mobilization effort, it can surface leaders that are built for this moment, which we don't currently have.
Interesting. Do you think there's any chance? I mean, you know, again, this is so not my area, so that's fascinating to me. Do you think, you know, I always think of things as a bell curve that, you know, there are going to be all sorts of, there's no one answer. There are going to be people who are racist. There are people who are xenophobes. There's people who are going to never like Trump. I mean, they're different buckets, and it's sort of looking for where's sort of the people who are shiftable. And there's no question we went into the last election eyes wide open. And but I don't think the Democrats helped themselves by having Biden, you know, stay on in as long as he did. And it's like that it's hard to switch horses midstream and then think, and this, by the way, is no knock. I'm not trying to knock, you know, Biden or Kamala Harris. I'm just trying to say that in fact, what happened, you just wonder if it was a strong candidate from the beginning, whether we would have ended up in this place, because again, it's not like there was, I mean, in spite of what Donald Trump says, it was not a land.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Slide.
No, it wasn't. Although I will say, so first of all, you don't have to say anything bad about Kamala Harris or Joe Biden. I'm going to say a lot about Joe Biden. Sure, that's bad. I mean, the insanity of him, the arrogance, the saying that democracy was at stake, but not behaving like democracy was at stake. And it's not just that he ran again, which was the catastrophic mistake, but also the failure of the 4 years to sort of build a bench of stars. I mean, one of the things that always I find so interesting in an alarming way is, you know, Donald Trump has all these crazy people in his cabinet, but they're like cartoon characters like Pete Hegseth, Pam Bondi. They're all like these villains with their own Kash Patel. You know who they are. Name 5 people from Joe Biden's cabinet. Pete Buttigieg and Jake Sullivan. I mean, like, let me tell you what, if you ask the American people to name 5 people in Biden's cabinet, they couldn't. You ask them to do it for Trump's, they could. And the way that Republicans dominate, I mean, just practice narrative dominance, like wrestlers, like performance artists out there constantly, like, it's sort of going to take more like Joe Biden didn't build any stars. He didn't create an ecosystem that could put forward his ideas. And so it was a real misuse of those 4 years. So I agree with you. Look, I don't think that America, I'm optimistic about Americans. I don't think they want authoritarianism. And I think inflation ultimately was the thing that I think Joe Biden's age plus inflation was the reason. But I do think Donald Trump won the culture by more than he won the vote. And I think that the Democrats right now, what I hear both in focus groups and just my own personal opinion, is that they feel wildly insufficient to the moment. And people get mad at me because they're like, Sarah, why don't you focus on, you know, the fascists over here? Why do you care about pronouns or whatever? And I'm like, because there's fascists over here. And I need a really strong opposition party that can build a majority coalition. And right now there's nobody we're not looking at the Democrats saying like, oh, this, there's an obvious person who could do it.
A final question, because I'm sort of interested in this, is that I was struck by the polling and the interest in the Abrego Garcia case. Obviously, as a lawyer, you know, it spoke to me in so many different ways in terms of what it, both what was happening to him and what was happening, sort of what it signaled about what the administration would do. Both, it fell into the category of both illegal conduct and cruelty. And it's still going on. And I was struck by how much that resonated with the public. And I wanted to know whether you're seeing any of that. Because like, that's the part of me that's optimistic, which is, I think that that at core, there are enough people who are just well brought up, decent Americans who may be very tough on crime, maybe tough on immigration, but believe in fairness. And don't want to see it done justly. When I was a very young lawyer, I worked on a death penalty case as a defense lawyer. And with the Georgia Supreme Court ultimately said, you know, we had a case where somebody was, at the time the term was mentally retarded. That's not the term that we use now. And the Georgia Supreme Court said, you know, we take this, what happened here, very, very seriously. We are tough on crime. It is unconstitutional under the Georgia Supreme Court to kill somebody with this mental condition, and it's not going to be allowed. And this was a very conservative state saying we have very conservative policies, but we are not cruel. And I feel like that can resonate with people, or at least I hope it does.
You know, immigration is such an interesting one, because I think it's one of the things that Democrats really can sort of just fix, like in the way that they talk about it. Americans want two things pretty clearly. They want a border that is secure, and they want a way for people to come here legally. Americans are not anti-immigrant per se. Like, there's a feeling right now that it's really awful, and I do think what you're hearing is a frustration with the fact that the border's been unsecured for so long that we've tipped into this place where people feel like it's lawless. And so they're sort of willing to tolerate a certain amount of trying to fix this problem. But they are, and you can see it in the polling, meaning if you've committed a crime, people are like, get this person out of here.
Of course, of course.
But they do not want people treated cruelly. They do want due process. And this idea that we're sending people to other countries really confuses people. They're like, I don't understand why we're doing that. Like, they understand if you're deporting them back to their home place, but if you're sending them to jail somewhere, they're like, why are we doing that? And so I don't think that Americans are fundamentally bad. I had this sort of fight with JVL on my, one of my co-hosts all the time, where they don't want the cruel. Now, some percentage do. Some people have either just because they suck as humans, or they're so frustrated with the extent of the problem and how long it has gone without. Because sometimes people are like, but Trump didn't build the wall, so why are people still happy with him? And I'm like, the wall was a stand-in for Trump saying, I'm going to take immigration really seriously in a way that other politicians haven't. And that is honestly the thing that got him elected the first time, right? That's the thing that defined his presidency. And it was an underappreciated thing about the American people that they wanted a legal system of immigration where we knew who was in the country, not that we built an economy on people crossing the border and we just don't know who's here. And so I think that now, to be clear, though, Trump ran the second time on mass deportation. Like, and there's a lot of people who, I think they just hit the frustration with where they are. I'm not justifying that part, but they do bristle, though I'm not sure they're going to go to the mat for it. They bristle at it, but Trump's not going to lose elections on being too tough on deportations. But I do think Democrats, by simply saying, we want a closed border and a humane immigration process where we know who people are here, but immigrants are important to have, you know, as part of, like, that is part of what America is. That is part of our values. There's a thing there that is in the sweet spot of where the American people are.
Okay, I do have one more question, even though I kept on telling you it was like the last question. What about if you
George
run
George never lets me talk. So this is a totally new thing on this podcast.
I like it, right? It's like this is the right, George explains everything to you. And it's like, yeah. Okay. if you run an extortion presidency where you are extorting law firms, universities, companies, we now own 10% of Intel. We are telling Harvard, give us X millions of dollars if you want X billions of dollars. I mean, it's just, you know, I view it as like an extortion racket. And you, obviously, lots of people have been written about law firms. Doesn't it show up in voting? I mean, who, if you're at any of these places, aren't you going to be like, I want to live in a law and order society? That is what happens in Russia, where everything just happens, where it's like, you know, you pay to play. And that is the kind of thing that you would think if you're in any of these places, and it's lots and lots of senior executives down to employees, or can see it happening.
This is such a big, complicated question. So let me see if I can take it in a couple parts. So the first part is just information. What do people actually know? And I will tell you, for a lot of the people that Donald Trump brought in off the sidelines, and this is an important piece of Donald Trump's coalition, are people who had not voted before. They are not people who were just persuaded by Donald Trump. There were people who, like, I never cared about politics until Donald Trump showed up. And part of that is because there's a red solo cup mentality. He made it fun. They're talking to them in ways that they understand, meaning not like a regular politician, right? And so his communication style has allowed him to bring in all these people, and they do not care about the 10% in Intel. They are not ideologically conservative. They're just there for Trump, which is one of my actually pieces of optimism for the future, is that Trump in some ways is sui generis, right? Like, he is the only person who I looked up recently, the finale of The Apprentice had, I think, 32 million viewers in its first season. Trump got like 68 million votes, you know, the first time around. I don't even think, maybe it was like 64 million, but like, whatever it was, like half of the people who voted for him, like, watched The Apprentice, watched him as this businessman. And so there are people, they're not conservatives, they're not Republicans. In fact, they hate Republicans. They hate Kevin McCarthy. They hate Mike Pence. They hate the thing that used to be Republicans. And so to say, like, aren't they bothered by what's happening to law firms? No, they are not. Like, and they're not paying it. They don't live in an information ecosystem where that is what they're hearing about. There are lots of people who do care about it, and many of them, it's why Democrats are going to overperform in the midterms, right? It's why Democrats have been overperforming in the midterms, is because people who are much more plugged in, who focus on these issues, who care about these issues, they will show up and vote in a midterm election. Donald Trump brings people out, and this is a big shift Democrats are going to have to make. It used to be an article of faith that higher turnout was good for Democrats. That is not the case with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is turning out massive low propensity or previously not voter, non-voters. They are now part of his coalition. So that's one thing, right? Is like, who are the people that are in Trump's coalition? Now, there is then that layer of college-educated suburban voters or the bankers or whatever who are like, I'm going to let Trump. He can throw red meat to these, you know, boob bait for Bubba type things. But I'm going to get what I want out of him. And I think those people are interesting, because I think if he crashes the economy, they will be people who, like, and you already see some of those people not being happy with him, but not nearly enough. Like, one of the things that drives me crazy is the elites are basically like, I don't know if he makes me rich. It's cool. I don't care. Like, they don't seem to. And so, like, I don't forget the average voter, like people who really understand the need to have a legal system, who live inside those structures, who operate in a business environment that needs that structure, the Fed, whatever it is, the rules. Those are people who I find the most baffling. But they also are the people who have access to Trump, who can do crony capitalism, who can find ways to get carve outs for themselves. And so they're just like, oh, no, I see the game Trump's playing. I can play it with him. And so that's the part that causes me rage. Like, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the what's his name, the Post, like, watching them do what I watched Republicans do in 2018 has been one of the things that scared me the most. Andrew Weissman, thank you so much for sitting in for George. Thanks for talking about all the illegal news with me. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of George Conway Explains It All without George Conway. Go ahead, hit subscribe, like, follow us in all the places, and we'll see you next time.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell him well about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the Emoluments to the Russian ties. Oh, Sarah, listen close.